Oh, now it decides to work. Okay. Well, that's good. I was getting concerned about it. Thing kept coming on and going off and saying it wasn't working. It's cold. It's a little windy. We had a pretty good snow the night before last. And I'm walking. One step down from full gear. Walking on ice, walking on ice. Well, it said the low was 8. The car said it's 18. We do have a bit of wind. The wind chill. I'm not certain at all exactly what it is. I don't know how you... I think the current condition thing said that it was like 22 degrees. So, that's probably about adequate. So I called. I didn't get a chance to do what I had hoped to get done yesterday, Sunday. Gonna pull together a bit of a letter to Robert Williamson in Tingwall. Over in Shetland. In the manner of all the ascendant family, stuff like that, just try to keep in contact. Encourage him to continue his driving there, and just in case he thought that Shetland was an abandoned project, it is not. That we continue to push forward. As usual, the Sunday morning, what I might start calling the Lord's lineup, with Elder Bednar. Current apostle. I don't know what the name of the talk was. It's the only talk he gave October 2012, but I will likely refer to it as Persistence and Patience, as you'll recall, probably word I got from the Lord on the whole subject of Shetland in general was patience. And I am I was looking back at myself and saying, you know, there's at least one thing that's true, James, is you are actually quite persistent, and one would look at that as some kind of great virtue, and it is, but I don't think the way I approach it is particularly, you know, oh, you're just such a wonderful guy. It's like, no, this is, I'm, you know, most of my attributes are due to an obsessional quality that's kind of built into me. And you go, you don't want to stay around it too long. And I never tell other people to follow my lead. You know, I said, I prefer to look at myself as an example of God's curious workmanship. And you know, other people learn persistence, and that's a virtue. To go from not being a persistent person to becoming persistently following a course, persistently going forward in a good, positive way, is a wonderful virtue. I don't look at it that way for me, because almost like, well, persistence is kind of built into the thing. And insofar as you would translate what I do over to other people, it's probably a little bit, you know, for just saying, you really should have given up on that, or this is really beyond what's useful. I actually have a bulletin board system set up on the main server. Right now it simply kind of keeps track of my email, my jason@qix.me, mail. That's pretty much the first it serves for the moment, but it's all there, complete. I probably need to eventually pull it together a little bit better, polish it up just a bit. In line with letting it be a little bit more open to other people. Anyway, but even this natural kind of inborn obsessional sort of persistence, of which the VBS is an example, has juices, and you want to use it for good things, for good. And I guess in that way, what I'm doing has a virtue. I'm up to my highest point, most exposed. The wind is thankfully at my back right now. It won't be for much longer, I'm sorry. still this cold tomorrow, I should probably go up to the balaclava. Wish I had a better one. The one I have is full face and nothing else. It can't be adjusted. And I think that would do better. You know, it can be adjustable. You can wear it 5 different ways. You can wear it as a hat. You can wear it as a neck cover. Anyway, getting back to persistence. You know, patience isn't one of my, it isn't a virtue at all. People say, well, he hung in there, and you go, well, no, he hung in there because his body doesn't allow him to do anything else. Even when it comes to futile, stupid things, he will, on some level, and I'm not even saying I'm effective, plod forward. What I'm doing, and craft something for Rob without letting it go too far, you know. So I don't want to, make troubles. You know. You gotta take day in small bites, frankly. Oh. And, chill your morning. So yeah, Elder Bednar's talk, which I probably need to go over better, but that's the one concept that leapt out at me, is to continue to persist. It'll come. Got involved in the whole Shetland thing. It was actually part of 2 or 3, or I don't know how many, but several thrusts. I'd always talk to my children about the importance of being international, thinking that way, and seeing other places, and getting involved with other people. And I'm not sure I have a purpose, because you're going to be a master of the universe, you know. I don't have any conception of that ever happening to any of us. Or that that's even something that needs to be done. Something that's always been very important to me, and I express it. And I think part of pursuing Shetland was being an example of doing it, you know. It's easy to talk about things. I think it's better to finally tell people or to show an example, to yourself, be an example of that life that you hope to have happen to others, yourself. So I think that's one of the things that prompts, and a good prompting, I think. The point is, you don't give up. You don't you don't stop. We have a cold moon. Anyway. It's not really windy, but it still continues to be predominantly at my back. It's got kind of a southeast wind, which is a little different. That easily indicates moisture being pumped up from the Gulf of Mexico, which is to the southeast of us here. You know, nearly 1,000 miles away. Pondering the opportunities involved in Shetland back somewhere. Caught my breath after it hit so hard on the fact that Shetland is features in the events of the future. It is not an inconsequential place. You know, and that's not to pump up anybody and say, oh, aren't we great? You know. I think on some level my legs are freezing up. I think I'm only about halfway too. Golly. Anyway, I think my brain's freezing up a little too. Some who, like Cleon Skousen, for instance, Cleon Skousen would say that the 10 tribes of Israel who were lost and who we are engaged now in something of a gathering, that he estimates that they are actually off-planet. on some level. You know, because I don't know how to interpret that exactly. He doesn't really go into details at all because he don't think he has any details to go into. Except to say that they're still tied to this place, although they may be someplace else temporarily. And that they are returning. Everybody tells them that that's the only problem for all of them. People surmise that means that they're in some north country and they will come down from that north country. Skousen, I think, rightly says, hey, he says, you know what, we have satellite technology, there is not a place on Earth that we don't know about. You know, there is not some mystical big island populated by millions of people that simply, you know, that we simply haven't run into yet. You know, much as you could say about the Renaissance or the, you know, the 17th, 18th century, when we were looking at, when we were exploring the seas finally in a large way. We aren't going to find some hideout of these things. You know, people say, oh, you know, these people are just going to spring out of the, out of the snow in the north, and you go, well, it may, you know, it may seem that way, it may look that way, but we have a sense for the fact that it's probably more along the lines of that's where they will first return to the earth. You know, we already have the whole concept of Enoch's Zion being taken up into heaven or into the sky. And that will also return, that those people will come back. And we can't but think that they've had their generations just like we have had them as well. And that my own personal take on the prelude to the millennium, you know, I don't know, sometimes I thought in the past it would almost be like explosive, but all of a sudden there could be a clear line, boom, you know, some cataclysmic effects will happen. People, you know, righteous people will be lifted up. I think it comes from Christian rapture, which is not, as far as I'm aware of, a true concept. And that the earth will be cleansed and redone. It will be put back on it. I think that came from concepts I picked up someplace else. But that this will be this, I don't know if it's fair to call it a gradual change. But it's going to be more gradual than some kind of huge cataclysm. I think there will certainly be very things happening, but they all don't happen at exactly the same time. You know, the returning of these lost tribes from the north is one of the things that will happen. The second coming is one of the things that will happen. And then the earth will be changed into a terrestrial place. So I think that has far more to do with With the concept of people, you know, I think people affect a place far more than most people generally think about. I think the environmentalists, for all their wackiness and their doom and gloom, at least have an interesting concept that bears a little bit of looking at. They would say that our physical pollution is the big deal. I would disagree. I think our righteousness has more to do with it. And and that doing, you know, being a better steward of what's yours is far more allied to a sense of personal truth and righteousness. And that to separate out and say, oh, well, you know, people can be as crass and as perverse as they like to be as long as they have a soft carbon footprint. And I must say that I disagree with this concept. You know, but I do think it is a combination of things that come together to make the terrestrial world that is coming next. You know, this is a world of a greater sense of righteousness. You know, it's like everybody saying, oh, my kid goes to a good school, and you go, but you do realize what causes a good school. I've never run into anybody who was really quite grokked, to stick a kind of an urban word in there. They really kind of understood what that really meant, you know. And you go, it has to do with good people, since that's really at the heart of it, you know. I said, a celestial world, God didn't in essence screw up a celestial world and say, okay, well, here, you know, this is a good test, let's give you this really crappy world and see what happens with it, you know. and see what you do with it. It really had to do with people and people's personal righteousness and things like that. It seems like our surroundings tend to reflect who we are and what we do. And I feel badly because I for one don't particularly, you know, get weird about that. You know, my backyard is a land of sticks and small little things. It probably needs just a good cleaning. And my neighbors will readily and happily agree that that needs to happen, and I'm sure it doesn't it doesn't raise me in the estimation in their eyes. You know, I think if there's one of the things that can be learned by the by the story of Adam and Eve, you know, in the Garden of Eden, and how it fell from the grail. And how they were cast out, to put kind of a word to it. Say effects of that the flood result. Typically what I'm like is this news, my mind's racing far ahead and I'm having to stop myself and come back. Right now it's not that, it's that my mind's moving so slowly that I think my I think my processor, my brain's running slower than my speech processor, my mouth. Pardon me. We're down at the base of the school run. Getting ready to go up the hill. Well, I haven't gotten to the bottom of the school hill yet. Start going up it, so we're not there yet. But yes, all these things have to do with personal righteousness, and I seem to recall, I wrote, I don't even know how good an essay it really was, an essay about enclaves of righteousness, and that Shetland seems to be one of these places. And I know one could look at it very subjectively now and say such a thing, probably. You know, isn't any better or any worse than any place else. But I think it has the possibility. And in having that possibility, that we need to nurture and encourage this. And this is really interesting because this is the first time I've really thought back to that one particular essay that I did. It was quite some time ago. It was really kind of a departure from what I had been talking about before and after. It was something that came to mind. And now, I think it's just right now, I'm saying there's probably a connection there. As I was thinking about what on earth I would put in that email to a Robert, is this concept of Shetland as one of these enclaves of righteousness, these somewhat Zion locations, small scale, you know. I guess that's what brings Shetland to the thing, is that it's kind of a, you know, It's a little off the beaten path. One hates to use the term isolated, because it's not, but you have to put forth a little bit of effort to go there. It isn't some place like, let's take Chicken Creek, for instance. Probably millions of people pass by or through Chicken Creek every year. Most of them don't know they've ever been there, you know. It's just a bump on a road. Almost for all practicalities, that's what it is. You may stop here to get gas, you may stop here to get food. You may stop here to sleep overnight if circumstances don't permit you to stay someplace that's bigger. Very few people, you know, say, oh, let's stop in Tucumcari, and can actually express some kind of a desire to do so. You know, kind of analogous thing to a flyover zone. You know, oh look, we're flying over Tucumcari. People go, what, or whoop-de-doo, or who cares, or, you know, whatever. Where Shetland is exactly the opposite. It's very rare that one would interface with Shetland incidentally. You know, if one were to go to Shetland, it would be somewhat purposeful. You know, even if it was wrapped up in a larger journey, Shetland is one of the prime reasons for doing it. Like, let's say you're on a cruise and you're cruising the Nordic Isles, you know. Perhaps you might start Orkney, or maybe even the Western Isles, Harris Lewis, something along those lines. Oh. Okay, this is where I'm hitting the icy wind. It hit me in the face now. And it doesn't stop until I go into the house. So it's gonna be on the cold side, but he's you know. The fact that Shetland is a purposeful part of a journey, you know, almost serves as a metaphor. I'm not trying to make anything huge out of all this, those kinds of stuff, you know. Tucumcari ends up being a strange collision. And I think it was kind of that way in my life. It was just a strange collision of place, circumstance, timing that put me in. You know, and I think God didn't have a hand in it. But I'm perfectly prepared to say that. You know, given my spiritual and otherwise development or whatever, Tucumcari was just as good as any place else. Kind of like driving along the interstate. Tucumcari is just as good a place to fuel up as San Juan or Santa Rosa or Adrian or any other place along this whole section of I-40. It really doesn't matter where you get your gas, nothing. The gas is very or anything else. The people are basically not the same. You know. place that nobody, I think, or at least in our sense of the case, incidentally, choose the step of the airport quickly. At least not the way I would be doing it. And I've always said, you know, when I've looked back, this would be our first really difficult move. The place was chosen for a larger reason than, you know, you got offered a job there. You know, that is probably the quintessential incidental thing. You know, God will certainly use these kinds of circumstances, if that's all he has to deal with, you know. Or if that's all, you know, I'd say for most people, where they are doesn't matter. I get the sense for the fact that, at least in my case, I'm getting prepared for something, and at this particular place, it was important for me to know where I was needing to go to, because it has to do with place. I don't know if Shetland is the near terminus of that return of the 10 tribes. That would be interesting, and that wind is stiff, and it's blowing right through the face. This would have been a good time to have a full face balaclava. Boy, let's keep going though. We're pretty soon going to get some houses and some trees that are going to block this wind. So, just must press forward. I would be surprised if part of the problem with the phone is it's freezing up. Just to say, technology can only take you so far. So you have to use other instrumentalities. And I think that's what kind of made my soul catch yesterday. Was the whole concept that there's a kid, they're being led, I'm following that leading, that's good, but that I need to persist in doing these things, that I need to continue on. That these impressions that got me this far were not faulty. And my interpretation of them wasn't far enough off not to be useful. And that was what made the whole circumstance at the very end of the first Shetland push, which is what I should probably call the first part of 2012, what I should probably refer to as the first Shetland push. The attempt to go there as a student, and come together to the opportunity to go to work. And the basic after prayer. And, you know, I had always been saying up until that time, we had not yet come to a place where you make a decision. You know? It just hasn't come yet. That when that decision finally came, the decision came, and things were, and I was offered the chance to go to Oregon. That opportunity. That when we prayed about it, it came back with a no. For both Lisa and I. You know. And that, you know, it was very, very much a Shetland or bust sort of thing. And since Shetland fell apart as a destination for a student visa, I but not to say that the larger process was damaged. I think I'd already begun conceptualizing the ascendant family. Even, I think, at that point, even as we were trying to pull together studies in Shetland. And I can't say that what I'm doing right now isn't, although I can't say it's very strictly speaking, anthropological, because that usually deals with people historically in the past. It deals more with questions of present and future. And I don't think there's a nice ready term for that. That when one says, okay, what kind of a degree do you give Jay for this body of work that he's going to produce here, or that he's started producing, and needs to get more, needs to work on a little more stridently than he's doing. I don't have one, you know. I don't know what the degree will consist of, what I hope it's not sociology. Oh, who cares? Not too far off, strangely, from my bachelor's degree in home economics. I'd have to say it's an interesting take on home economics, one that probably is not foreseen to a certain extent, but hey, what are you going to do with it? I think I'm getting numb because the wind's still blowing on me pretty bad. And so I am feeling a little bit of numbing on my legs. Not terribly so, but I'm going to keep warming up my nose. I always bring up to Lisa the fact that we are far colder right now than Shetland is. In fact, the last day, you know, there are now many days where our high temperature in Tucumcari does not reach the low temperature in Rerwick. So, you know, she talked about how cold it is. I don't mind bringing up the fact that it would be warmer in Lerwick even when you take into account wind chill and stuff like that. seems, and this is an interesting observation, our weather here, temperature, we're very, at least temperature-wise, you know, it, number one, just doesn't rain here, you know. It rains here occasionally, but you can almost predict the fact that any given day, it's not going to rain on any level at all, you know, whether it's snow or whatever, not getting any precipitation. The variableness of Shetland is, I think, more based on that sort of thing, you know, is that you can never know if it's going to rain or not. But one thing, which is far different for us, is that the temperatures change. Number one, what I'm accustomed to, there is no temperature change there. You know, the normal, the normal day through a 24-hour period, the temperature will change by 2 to 3 degrees. Around here, that's this is not that there. Over there, you know, it's like, oh God, it's hot. Oh no, it's gotten cold by a couple of degrees. But as I pondered the whole concept of the wind, Shetland has a reputation for being quite windy. I think that is a relative term. I think Shetland is as very on wind as Tucumcari is on temperature. The wind can blow like a banshee there. Worse than it probably ever blows here. I've seen videos where people get out in a good stiff wind there, and they can hardly stand up. You know, and the whole point of trying to move around is just almost impossible. I think that's why they tend to cluster up their homes together as kind of a protection against the wind. I thought that was off the car.
Yeah.
I love you.
Bye.
Bye. Anyway, so, but it seems like as I look at forecasts and stuff like that, Tucumcari would probably actually have the higher wind speed average. I think the wind blows here more consistently at a bigger rate than it does in Shetland. You know, when you don't have gale force winds that are nigh on to knocking you over, it has a very light wind. Or, you know, at least as far as that goes, the wind seems quite light, you know. We have 7 kilometers an hour, which is nothing. You know, here, people have to turn on the fan to give them their movement. If that's all the wind is able to muster. We're much more accustomed, more regularly, to have a wind in the 20s or the 30 mile an hour, you know, knot, 20 or 30 knot range. Where they have the kite capability of much higher winds, but they happen less often, and they happen on a more consistent basis. You know, we're going to get these kinds of winds, but by and large, they will only come in the wintertime. You know, they won't come in the summer. Our biggest winds tend to come in the spring and the fall, you know, but ours don't reach gale force. You know, ours are along the lines 40, 50, 60, where theirs tend to be 80, 90, 100. You know, much, much, much bigger winds, but more rare. Anyway, so. And that's just my casual observation of it, given what I've seen. Of course, you know, conditions on the ground don't necessarily reflect what the Met Office says, for instance. You know, every time I left the National Weather Service and here, and whatever it might be, this winter has been consistently colder than what the Weather Service predicts. And I mean by an order of 10 degrees Fahrenheit. You know, they predict, oh, it'll be in the 50s. You go, no, you better bet on the 40s. This is because, but ours varies wildly, as always, you know. You can have a 70 degree day a day after a negative 10 day, you know. It's just that variable here. Of course, you know, that's because we have no mitigating factors to keep these wild temperature swings from happening. You know, Shetland has the wonders of number one being an island surrounded by water, number two being surrounded by somewhat warm waters, being pumped up from through the Gulf Stream, circumstances. Anyway, you know, it really doesn't matter, except that I'm cold and I'm getting this blown into my face. If I'm not careful, I'm gonna have some nose damage here. If I do this again tomorrow, I'm gonna be tired. Get the full face thing out.
Make sure when it gets up, you
don't
have.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, golly. So, Shetland is part of some larger plan by God. It is not incidental. It is a happening. I don't know the size of the happening. You know, they might not know that. Kind of interesting. But not big, you know. Well, it's not like the flood. You go, well, you know. God needs small things to happen. You probably know it's a big thing. Who knows? I don't know. It's not really my place to say or to know, you know. These kinds of maneuvers have to be executed with a great deal of faith involved. You know, those things are important. Okay, I'm on the cold side. The wind is finally at my back again for a couple of minutes. And that's it. That's all That's all I got today. I need to slow down. Robert. Because I think our Robert needs to get more of a sense of it. Not that he needs to have more faith in me, but in the fact that I'm a unique fella. And I'm being placed in a unique position to handle what would probably be considered as to do something unique. So that's how I pursue it. I don't know where any of this stuff leads. I think he had a sense of it on some level. I don't want to say, well, here I have something. Well, oh, I'm here. I'm frozen. Okay, I can stop this now if it hasn't already frozen up entirely.